The Wisdom of the Sands, Lecture Number 4, 24th of February, 1978, at the Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh Ashram, Pune.
Bhagwan, a wise man, the wonder of his age, taught his disciples from a seemingly inexhaustible store of wisdom. He attributed all his knowledge to a thick tome which was kept in a place of honour in his room. The sage would allow nobody to open the volume. When he died, those who had surrounded him, regarding themselves as his heirs, ran to open the book, anxious to possess what it contained. They were surprised, confused, and disappointed when they found that there was writing on only one page. They became even more bewildered and then annoyed when they tried to penetrate the meaning of the phrase which met their eyes. It was, "When you realize the difference between the container and the content, you will have knowledge."
Man is not born perfect. He is born incomplete. He is born as a process. He is born on the way as a pilgrim. That is his agony and his ecstasy too. Agony because he cannot rest. He has to go ahead. He has always to go ahead. He has to seek and search and explore. He has to become because his being arises only through becoming. Becoming is his being. He can only be if he is on the move. Evolution is intrinsic to man's nature. Evolution is his very soul. And those who take themselves for granted remain unfulfilled. Those who think they are born complete remain unevolved. Then the seed remains the seed, never becomes a tree, and never knows the joys of spring and the sunshine and the rain and the ecstasy of bursting into millions of flowers. That explosion is the fulfillment. That explosion is what God is all about, exploding into millions of flowers. When the potential becomes the actual, only then man is fulfilled. Man is born as a potential. That is unique to man. All other animals are born complete. They are born as they are going to die. There is no evolution between their birth and their death. It moves on the same plane. They never go through any transformation. There never happens any radical change in their life. They move horizontally. The vertical never penetrates them. If man also moves horizontally, he will miss his manhood. He will not become a soul. That's what Gurdjieff meant when he used to say that all people don't have souls. It is very rarely that a person has a soul. Now this is a very strange statement. Because down the ages you have been told that you are born with a soul. Gurdjieff says you are born only with the potential of becoming a soul, not with the actual soul. You have a blueprint, but the blueprint has to be worked out. You have the seed, but you have to search for the soil and the season and the right climate and the right moment to explode, to grow. Moving horizontally, you will remain without a soul. When the vertical penetrates you, you become a soul. Soul means the vertical has penetrated into the horizontal. Or, as an example, you can think of a cocoon, the caterpillar, and the butterfly. Man is born as a cocoon. Unfortunately, many die also as cocoons. Very few become caterpillars. A cocoon is static. It knows no movement. It remains stuck at one space, at one place, at one stage. Very few people grow into a caterpillar. The caterpillar starts moving. Dynamism enters. The cocoon is static. The caterpillar moves. With movement, life is stirred. Again, many remain caterpillars. They go on moving horizontally, on the same plane, in one dimension. Rarely a man like Buddha, or Jalaluddin Rumi, or Jesus, or Kabir, takes the final quantum leap and becomes a butterfly. Then the vertical enters in. The cocoon is static. The caterpillar moves, knows movement. The butterfly flies, knows heights. It starts moving upwards. The butterfly grows wings. Those wings are the goal. Unless you grow wings and you become a winged phenomenon, you will not have the soul. Truth is realized through three stages: assimilation, independence, and creativity. Remember these three words. They are very seminal. Assimilation. That is the function of the cocoon. It simply assimilates food. It is getting ready to become a caterpillar. It is arranging. It is a reservoir. When the energy is ready, it will become a caterpillar. Before the movement, you will need a great energy to move. The caterpillar is assimilation. Complete. The work done. Then the second thing starts, independence. The cocoon is dropped. Now there is no need to stay in one place. The time has come to explore. The time has come for the adventure. The real life starts with movement, independence. The cocoon remains dependent, a prisoner, in chains. The caterpillar has broken the chains, it starts moving. The ice has melted, it is no more frozen. The cocoon is a frozen state. The caterpillar is movement, river-like. And then comes the third stage of creativity. Independence in itself means not much. Just by being independent, you will not be fulfilled. It is good to be out of the prison. But for what? Independence for what? Freedom for what? Remember, freedom has two aspects. First, freedom from, and second, freedom for. Many people attain only to the first kind of freedom, freedom from. Free from the parents, free from the church, free from the organization, free from this and that, free from all kinds of prisons. But for what? This is a very negative freedom. If you know only freedom from, you have not known real freedom. You have known only the negative aspect. The positive has to be known. Freedom to create. Freedom to be. Freedom to express. To sing your song. To dance your dance. That is the third state, creativity. Then, the caterpillar becomes a winged phenomena, a honey taster, searches, discovers, explores, creates. Hence, the beauty of the butterfly. Only creative people are beautiful, because only creative people know the splendor of life. They have eyes to see, and ears to hear, and hearts to feel. They are fully alive. They live at the maximum. They burn their torch from both the ends. They live in intensity. They live in totality. Or we can use the metaphors used by Friedrich Nietzsche. He says that man's life can be divided into three successive metamorphoses of the spirit. First he calls the camel. Second he calls the lion. Third he calls the child. Very pregnant metaphors. The camel, the lion, and the child. Each human being has to draw upon and assimilate the cultural heritage of his society, his culture, his religion, his people. He has to assimilate all that the past makes available. He has to assimilate the past. This is what Nietzsche calls the camel stage. The camel has the power of storing up in his body enormous amounts of food and water for his arduous journey across the desert. And the same is the situation of the human individual. You have to pass across a desert. You have to assimilate the whole past. And remember, just memorizing is not going to help assimilation. And also remember, the person who memorizes the past memorizes only because he cannot assimilate. If you assimilate the past, you are free from the past. You can use it, but it cannot use you. You possess it, but it does not possess you. When you have assimilated the food, you need not remember it. It does not exist separate from you. It has become your blood, your bone, your marrow. It has become you. The past has to be digested. Nothing is wrong in the past. It is your past. You need not begin from ABC. Because if each individual has to begin from ABC, there will not be much evolution. That's why animals have not evolved. The dog is the same as it was millions of years before. Only man is the evolving animal. From where this evolution comes? It comes because man is the only animal who can assimilate the past. Once the past is assimilated, you are free from it. You can move in freedom and you can use your past. Otherwise, you will have to pass through so many experiences, your life will be wasted. You can stand on the shoulders of your fathers and forefathers and their fathers and their forefathers. Man goes on standing upon each other's shoulders. Hence the height that man achieves. Dogs cannot achieve that. Wolves cannot achieve that. They depend on themselves. Their height is their height. In your height, Buddha is assimilated, Christ is assimilated, Patanjali is assimilated, Moses is assimilated, Lao Tzu is assimilated. The greater the assimilation, the higher you stand. You can look from the peak of a mountain. Your vision is great. Assimilate more. There is no need to be confined by your own people. Assimilate the whole past of all the peoples of the whole earth. Be a citizen of the planet Earth. There is no need to be confined by the Christian and the Hindu and the Mohammedan. Assimilate all. The Quran is yours. The Bible is yours. So is the Talmud. And so is the Veda and Tao Te King. All is yours. Assimilate all. And the more you assimilate, the higher will be the peak on which you can stand and look far away, and distant lands and distant views become yours. This Nietzsche calls the camel stage. But don't be stuck there. One has to move. The camel is the cocoon. The camel is a holder. But if you are stuck at that stage and always remain a camel, then you will not know the beauties and the benedictions of life. Then you will never know God. You will remain stuck with the past. The camel can assimilate the past but cannot use it. In the course of his personal development, the time comes when the camel has to become the lion. The lion proceeds to tear apart the huge monster known as Thou Shalt Not. The lion in man roars against all authority. The lion is a reaction, a rebellion against the camel. The individual now discovers his own inner light as the ultimate source of all authentic values, he becomes aware of his primary obligation to his own inner creativity, to his inmost hidden potential. Few remain stuck at the stage of lying. They go on roaring and roaring and become exhausted in their roaring. It is good to become a lion, but one has still to take one more jump, and that jump is to become the child. Now, each of you has been a child, but those who know, they say the first childhood is a false childhood. It is like first teeth. They only look like teeth, they are of no use. They have to fall down. Then the real teeth is born. The first childhood is a false childhood. The second childhood is the real childhood. That second childhood is called the stage of the child or the stage of the sage. It means the same. Unless a man becomes utterly innocent, free from past, so much free that he is not even against the past. Remember it. The person who is still against the past is not really free. He has still some grudges, some complaints, some wounds. The camel still haunts. The shadow of the camel still follows. The lion is there, but is still afraid somehow of the camel. Fearful, it may come back. When the fear of the camel is completely gone, the roaring of the lion stops. Then the song of the child is born. I would like you to go into these three stages very deeply and very penetratingly, because they are of immense value. The stage of the camel, assimilation. Just like a child in the womb does nothing but assimilates, just eats the mother, gets bigger and bigger, is getting ready for the final plunge to move into the world. Right now there is no other work for the child. For 9 months in the mother's womb, he eats and sleeps. He sleeps and eats. He goes on sleeping and eating. These are the only two functions. Even after the child is born for months, he will be just doing that. Eating and sleeping. Slowly, slowly, sleeping will become less and less. And eating will also become less and less. He is ready. He is ready to become an individual. And the moment the child becomes ready to be an individual, disobedience enters in. The child starts saying no. Yes saying by and by disappears. Obedience dies. Disobedience is born. The state of camel is the state of assimilation. The camel does not know how to say no. The camel is not acquainted with the no. He has not heard the word, and he has not tasted the joys of saying no. He only knows yes. His yes cannot be very deep, because without knowing no, your yes cannot be very deep. It has to remain superficial. The man who has not known no, how can he really know yes? His yes will be important. The camel's yes is important. The camel does not know what is happening. He only goes on saying yes because that is the only word that he has been taught. Obedience belief. These are the characteristics of the stage called camel. Adam was in this stage before he ate the fruit of the tree of knowledge. And each human being passes through this stage. This is a stage which is pre-mind and pre-self. There is no mind yet. The mind is growing, but is not a complete phenomenon. It is very vague, ambiguous, dark, nebulous. The self is on the way, but it still is only on the way. There are no clear-cut definition of it. The child does not know himself as separate yet. The Adam, before he ate the fruit, was part of God. He was in the womb. He was obedient, a e-seer, but he was not independent. Independence enters only from the door of no. From the door of yes, only dependence. So in this stage of the camel, there is dependence, helplessness. The other is more important than your own being. God is more important. Father is more important. Mother is more important. Society is more important. The priest is more important. The politician is more important. Except you, everybody is important. The other is important. You are still not there. It is a very unconscious state. Majority of the people are stuck there. They remain camels. Almost 99% people remain camels. This is a very sad state of affairs, that 99% human beings remain in the cocoon. That's why there is so much misery and no joy. And you can go on searching for joy, but you will not find, because joy is not given there outside. Unless you become a child, the third stage is attained. Unless you become a butterfly, you will not be able to know joy. Joy is not something given outside. It is a vision that grows inside you. It is possible only in the third stage. The first stage is of misery, and the third stage is of bliss. And between the two is the state of the life, which is sometimes miserable and sometimes pleasant. Sometimes painful and sometimes pleasurable. At the stage of the camel, you are parrots. You are just memories, nothing else. Your whole life consists of beliefs given by others to you. This is where you will find the Christians and the Mohammedans and the Hindus and the Jainas and the Buddhists. Go in the churches and the temples and the mosques, and you will find great gatherings of camels. You will not find a single human being. They go on repeating parrot-like. I have heard a story. The story is told of the medieval knight who attended a course at the local dragon slaying school. Several other young knights also attended this special class taught by Merlin, the magician. Our anti-hero went to Merlin the first day to let him know that he would probably not do well in the course because he was a coward and was sure he would be much too frightened and inept ever to be able to slay a dragon Merlin said he need not worry because there was a magic dragon slaying sword which he would give this cowardly young knight. With such a sword in hand, there was no way that anyone could fail in slaying any dragon. The knight was delighted to have this official magic prop with which any knight, no matter how worthless, could kill a dragon. From the first field trip on, magic sword in hand, the cowardly knight slew dragon after dragon, freeing one maiden after another. One day towards the end of the term, Merlin sprung a pop quiz on the class which the young knight was attending. The students were to go out in the field and kill a dragon that very day. In the flurry of excitement, as all the young knights rushed off to prove their mettle, our anti-hero grabbed the wrong sword from the rack. Soon he found himself at the mouth of a cave from which he was to free a bound maiden. Her fire-breathing captor came rushing out, not knowing that he had picked the wrong weapon. The young knight drew back his sword in preparation for undoing the charging dragon. As he was about to strike, he noticed that he had taken the wrong sword. No magic sword this, just your ordinary etiquette for good knights only sword. It was too late to stop. He brought down the ordinary sword with a trained sweep of his arm, and to his surprise and delight, off came the head of still another dragon. Returning to the class, dragon's head tied to his belt, sword in hand, and maiden in tow, he rushed to tell Merlin of his mistake and of his unexplainable recovery. Merlin laughed when he heard the young knight's story. His answer to the young knight was, "I thought that you would have guessed by now. None of the swords are magic, and none of them ever have been. The only magic is in the believing. The camel lives in the magic of believing. It works. It can work miracles. But the camel remains a camel." The growth is missing. The people praying in the temples and the churches are under the influence of belief. They don't know what God is. They have never felt anything like that. They only believe. Their magic of belief goes on doing certain things to them. But that is all make-believe, a kind of dream world. They are not out of the unconscious, out of their sleep. And remember, I am not saying that this stage is not necessary. It is necessary. But once it is complete, one has to jump out of it. One is not here to remain a camel forever. And don't be angry at your parents, or the teachers, or the priests, or the society. Because they have to create a kind of obedience in you. Because only through obedience you will be able to assimilate. The father has to teach. The mother has to teach. And the child has to simply absorb. If doubt arises prematurely, assimilation will be stopped. Just think of a child in the mother's womb and becomes doubtful. He will die. Becomes doubtful whether to partake food from this woman or not. Whether the food is really nourishing or not. Who knows, it may be poisonous. Whether to sleep 24 hours or not. Because this is too much, sleeping continuously 24 hours for 9 months. If the child becomes a little bit doubtful, in that very doubt the child will die. And still a day comes when doubt has to be imbibed, learned. Each thing has its own season. Listen to this. beautiful poem by Carl Sandburg. What shall he tell that son? A father sees a son nearing manhood. What shall he tell that son? Life is hard. Be still, be a rock. And this might stand him for the storms, and serve him for humdrum and monotony, and guide him amid sudden betrayals, and tighten him for slack moments. Life is soft loam. Be gentle, go easy. And this too might serve him. Brutes have been gentled where less is failed. The growth of a frail flower in a path up has sometimes shattered and split a rock. A tough will counts, so does desire, so does a rich soft wanting. Without rich wanting, nothing arrives. Tell him too much money has killed men and left them dead years before burial, and quest of lucre beyond a few easy needs has twisted good enough man sometimes into dry, coveted worms. Tell him time as a stuff can be wasted. Tell him to be a fool every so often, and to have no shame over having been a fool, yet learning something out of every folly, hoping to repeat none of the cheap follies, thus arriving at intimate understanding of a world numbering many fools. Tell him to be alone often and get at himself, and above all, tell himself no lies about himself, whatever the white lies and protective fronts he may use amongst other people. Tell him solitude is creative if he is strong, and the final decisions are made in silent rooms. Tell him to be different from other people if it comes natural and easy being different. Let him have lazy days seeking his deeper motives. Let him seek deep for where he is a born natural, then he may understand Shakespeare and the Wright brothers, Pasteur, Pavlov, Michael Faraday, and free imaginations, bringing changes into a world resenting change. He will be lonely enough to have time for the work he knows as his own. Each father is faced with the problem, what to tell the son. Each mother confronts the problem, what to teach the daughter. Every teacher worries what should be imparted to the new generation. The past has many glories, many peaks of understanding, many conclusions which have to be imparted to the child. In the first stage, everybody has to be a camel. He is saying, believing, whatsoever is given, assimilating, digesting. But this is only the beginning of the journey. This is not the end. The second stage is difficult. The first stage the society gives you. That's why there are millions of camels and very few lions. The society leaves you when you have become a perfect camel. Beyond that, the society cannot do anything. It is there the work of the society ends, of the school, the college, the university. It leaves you a perfect camel with a certificate. Lion, you have to become on your own. Remember it. If you don't decide to become a lion, you will never become a lion. That risk has to be taken by the individual. That is a gamble. That is very dangerous too. Because by becoming a lion, you will annoy all the camels around you. And the camels are peace-loving animals. They are always ready to compromise. They don't want to be disturbed. They don't want any new thing to happen in the world, because all new things disturb. They are against the revolutionaries and the rebellious. And not about great things, mind you, not about Socrates and Christ. They are bringing great revolutions. The camels are afraid of so small things that you will be surprised. I have heard in December 1842, Adam Thompson of Cincinnati filled the first bathtub in the United States. The news of Mr. Thompson's tub was quickly spread. Newspapers said that the newfangled idea would ruin the democratic simplicity of the republic. And just think of it. Bathtub will ruin the integrity of the democratic republic. Doctors predicted rheumatism, inflammation of the lungs, etc., etc. The wise ones agreed that bathing in the winter time would result in the decline of the robust population. Philadelphia, the cradle of liberty, tried to put a ban on the bathing from the 1st of November to 1st of March. Boston in 1845 made bathing unlawful except on the advice of a doctor. Hartford, Providence, Wellington, and other cities tries to block the bath habit with extra heavy water rates. The state of Virginia took a slap at bathing by placing a tax of $30 a year on every bathtub brought into the state. But by 1922, there were manufactured 889,000 bathtubs a year. To think in the lives of people still living, man did not know even that a bath was good for him, puts man in a class of absolute unreliability as to his judgment of thinking on any matter. The camels are simply against anything new. It does not matter what. It may be just a bathtub. And they will rationalize their antagonism. In one section of ancient Greece, it long was the custom that when a man proposed a new law in the popular assembly, he did so on a platform with a rope round his neck. If the law was passed, they removed the rope. If it failed, they removed the platform. The lines are not welcome. The society creates every kind of difficulty for the lines. The camels are afraid of these people. They disturb their convenience. They disturb their sleep. They create worry. They create a desire in the camels to become lions. That is the real problem. Why Jesus is crucified? His very presence. And many camels start dreaming of becoming lions. And that disturbs their sleep. And that disturbs their ordinary mundane life. Why Buddha is stoned? Why Mahavira is not allowed to enter into cities? Why Mansoor is beheaded? These people disturb. They disturb your sleep. They go on roaring. Buddha has called his sermons the lion's roar. The state of the camel is given by the society. The second state has to be attained by the individual. In attaining it, you become an individual. you become unique. You are no more a conformist. You are no more part of a tradition. The cocoon is dropped. You become a caterpillar. You start moving. The state of the line has these characteristics: independence, no say, disobedience, rebellion against the other, against authority, against dogma, against scriptures, against the church, against the political power, against the state. The lion is against everything. He wants to shatter everything and create the whole world anew, closer to the heart's desire. He has great dreams and utopias in his mind. He looks mad to the camel, because the camels live in the past and the lion starts living in the future. A great gap arises. The lion heralds the future. And the future can come only if the past is destroyed. The new can enter into existence only if the old ceases to exist and creates a space for the new. The old has to die for the new to be. So there is a constant fight between the lion and the camel, and the camels are the majority. The lion happens once in a while. The lion is an exception, and the exception only proves the rule. Disbelief is his characteristic. Doubt is his characteristic. Adam eats the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Mind is born. Self becomes a defined phenomenon. The camel is non-egoistic. The lion is very egoistic. The camel knows nothing of the ego. The lion only knows the ego. That's why you will always find revolutionaries, rebellious people, poets, painters, musicians, all are very egoistic. They are bohemians. They live their life. They do their thing. They don't care a bit about others. Let the others go to hell. They are no more part of any structure. They become free from the structure. The movement, the lion's roar, is bound to be egoistic. They need a great ego to go into this. In the East, you will find more camels. In the West, you will find more lions. That's why in the East, to surrender seems so easy. For the Western mind, surrender seems so difficult. But one thing has to be remembered. The Eastern mind finds it very easy to surrender. That's why his surrender is of not much value. He is already surrendered. He does not know how to say no. That's why he says yes. When Western mind surrenders, it is very difficult. It is a struggle for the Western mind to surrender. But when the Western mind surrenders, there is great transformation. Because the surrender has been hard, arduous, an uphill task. In the East, the surrender is cheap. In the West, it is costly. Only few courageous people can afford it. So he surrenders because there is no more possibility to become a lion. It feels very comfortable, easy to surrender, to become part of a mob, a mass. The West has created the ego. The West has paid more attention to the lion. Doubt, disbelief, ego. But whenever the Western mind surrenders, there is really great transformation. Eastern mind surrenders, remains the camel. If the Western mind surrenders, there is the possibility of the child to be born. When the lion surrenders, he becomes the child. When the camel surrenders, he remains the camel. So I may appear paradoxical to you, but if you understand what I am saying, it will not be very difficult. And the paradox will not look really a paradox. Each individual has to be taught the ego before he can be able to drop it. Each individual has to come to a very crystallized ego. Only then the dropping is of any help. Otherwise, not.